Welcome to Muffly Auto, a Harry Potter podcast where we fill your ears to prevent you from hearing nearby conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Blake, and today we throw out our wand hands and go for a ride as we continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban and come now to the third chapter, The Night Bus. Now, Josh, in this chapter, we get Harry, who is just, he's just left number 4 Privet Drive, and he's out on the road. He's kind of like gone from a state of unknown and sort of uncertainty. And then by the end of the chapter, he's like laying in the best situation he could possibly be in rather than staying with the Dursleys, like being at, it sort of tells it in the next chapter, but being in Diagon Alley, like in the Leaky Cauldron, he can just explore all he wants. So this is quite a change in, you know, from start of chapter to end of chapter.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think that as we closed our last episode, we were, you know, just reflecting on the fact that at this point, Harry is in his mind gone forever, right? He thinks he's going to be expelled, certainly, and maybe even have his wand broken. And so this is a chapter which really does change those fortunes.
Yeah, but don't worry, Harry. You'll be back safe in the Dursleys' arms next year. So don't worry. There you go. He has that, once he finds out, he's like, oh, all is normal. He's like, I guess I'm going back to the Dursleys. but that's okay.
That's another turn of events that will be, you know, on the negative side.
Yes, exactly. It sort of, it just turns. And that's, I feel like, what makes a chapter really interesting is that, and you see it pretty clear as day in this chapter where, you know, the whole thing shifts, right? Like Harry's sense of safety or security, however you'd want to put it, but things turn, right? Like he goes from that to being safe. And I think that's what makes this chapter interesting, is that we don't know what is going to happen to Harry. And then all of a sudden this, you know, magical bus comes out, which he didn't intend to kind of call, but he does. And that's sort of his ride, his safety. And then all of a sudden we're greeted by the Minister for Magic. But yeah, maybe we should do a chapter summary and get on into it.
Sounds good. Having left the Dursleys after the fiasco with Aunt Marge, Harry realizes how difficult it will be to exist in the Muggle world without money or any other connections. He reasons that no real consequences would come from using more magic, and that the first priority at this time is to do everything possible to get to his money at Gringotts Bank. As he looks through his trunk for his invisibility cloak, he feels like he is being watched. Harry lights his wand and looks across the way, only to find a huge, dark, shadowy dog looking back at him. Startled, he trips into the street and is nearly run over by a triple-decker purple bus, which has appeared from nowhere. The conductor of the bus informs Harry that he has performed a bit of magic when he fell into the street with his wand aloft. This action summoned the night bus, an all-magical transportation option for wizards all over Great Britain. The bus differs in several ways from the buses Harry is used to. Instead of chairs, there are beds lined throughout the floors. More significantly, however, the bus appears to travel through Muggle traffic, along the sidewalks, all without being seen by the Muggles traveling on the roads. On the bus, Harry is worried about sharing his true identity and uses the alias of his classmate, Neville Longbottom. The night bus is greeted at Harry's destination by none other than the Minister of Magic, Cornelius Fudge. To Harry's surprise, the minister greets him warmly and gives away his true identity to the staff on the night bus. Fudge informs Harry that there will not be any great punishment for his actions and that things have been taken care of at the Dursleys, including memory modification and the puncturing of Aunt Marge. Harry is confused by the lack of consequences, especially considering his harsh warning the previous year when he was wrongly accused of performing magic. Fudge leaves Harry at the Leaky Cauldron with the strict instructions that he will only travel within Diagon Alley. Somewhat desperately, Harry asks Fudge to sign his Hogsmeade permission form, but Fudge declines.
Harry sure is lucky that this bus came along.
Oh, man.
Otherwise, what on earth would he do?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know how to apparate yet. And, I mean, this is the intention of the bus, right? Those who can't fly, those who can't apparate, who don't have access to the flu network, that sort of thing. There's this, you know, mode of transport for that kind of stranded type of wizard. Harry doesn't know that, though, and so it's a good thing that he stumbles upon this, this event, this knowledge that obviously calls the bus. But I mean, what you put down, Josh, for key theme, which we put it down as escape and reentry. I think that's pretty great. That, like, you know, he takes flight from Privet Drive, and then without knowing when or how or what he's kind of going to do, like he doesn't have a plan at all. But then as the chapter progresses, he realizes he the consequences, well, there aren't any, and he's he's finally let off, and he's kind of thinking, oh, I'm all right here, and he sort of just slowly just gets back into things like normal.
Yeah, and I think like one of the things that is really interesting about the night bus is that when you see it being used in Harry Potter, I think our first reaction is that's kind of an odd way to travel. Especially because there are all these different options that you mentioned, but when you start to think about some of the limitations of those travel options, you think of like a port key, and the limitations being you need to have a really clear communication with people on the other side, or you think about flying, and you think about how uncomfortable it is for long distances. Mm-hmm. You're not going to fly from London to Edinburgh, for example. or you think about the limitations of apparition. Again, distance really affects it, as well as having a really clear understanding of where you're going to. And so when you put all those together, there is this room for a kind of travel where you, as the person traveling, don't actually have to be in charge, right? Like, you're not doing anything. You're just lying down in a bed. And so there is, all of the limitations of the other forms of transport kind of point you in the direction of something like the night bus, which does actually make a bit of sense when you consider all other options.
Yeah, we'll link the article, the sort of the writing that JK did on this originally on Pottermore. So we'll link that in the show notes. But one thing that I took from that article was that, there are a lot of pure bloods that just didn't like this kind of introduction of a muggle way of transport, because that's, back in the day,
it's like the Hogwarts Express.
Exactly. Back in the wizarding world, a few sort of years ago, maybe it was a century or something like that, in the grand scheme of things, it was they found a need for this for those that were flu sick, or and that's flu with two O's, not a U there. Flu sick or
although the other one would probably work too.
Exactly.
You're talking about flu network sick.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got those people, and there needed to be a sort of a bit of transport for them. So this is the solution they came up with, but obviously there were some pure blood families that back then that didn't really appreciate this sort of adopting of a muggle mode of transport, this sort of something that seemed very like, it just carted muggles around, which is interesting. Like you said, with the Hogwarts Express, it's a train. Like, did they kick up a fuss about, a train? Seems very similar, but that's that. But yeah, very cool, magical vehicle. I quite like it a lot. Like, the imagery is real fun, and the in the movie with the how it sort of speeds around and it teleports and all of that, it like must the bus must have some kind of apparition ability or something.
Well, in this chapter we see they're in kind of the suburbs of London, and then all of a sudden they're back in Wales. There definitely has to be something going on there. We don't see that really magic explained anymore in any more detail. But you're very, very cool. And the other thing, Blake, that I think is really neat about this chapter and a few other chapters in the book series is how well mechanical inventions seem to work alongside magic. J.K. Rowling, not in the books, but outside the books, has said that technology itself doesn't work well with magic. And I think we can interpret from her words, she's meaning things digital and maybe electronic.
Yes.
But this kind of technology, mechanical technology, whether it's a train or whether it's a bus or whether it's a car from the ministry that's been enlarged, mechanical technology and magic seem to go together like a hand in a glove. I think it's an untapped potential. Like, people need to be selling muggle cars that have been enchanted, and that needs to be like a thing. This is such an untapped market in the wizarding world, I think.
There's a market for it. Now let me say this, Josh, is that I don't think there'd be any kind of like Tesla, Uber kind of magical enhanced things, because those just won't go together. Not these new cars that we have in the muggle world, because they're all just like digital or that's just right. like electronic.
You'd hate to have like your cruise control malfunction when you're trying to you know, scourgify something on your dashboard.
Yes, exactly. Like something breaks, and yeah, hopefully they don't think cruise control is autopilot or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that won't go down too well. But yeah, it definitely the pre-2000 vehicles, you know, maybe a lot of those ones would have more hope for kind of a conversion to the wizarding world. But there's a market for that. Maybe someone like you know, in retirement, let's say Mr. Weasley in retirement thinks of some great schemes.
A used car salesman, yeah.
I could see that.
But just think of how great that would be for like even family vacations if you're a wizarding family. You know, you've got these little kids that maybe don't want to travel by the Flu Network, or it's too far to travel by the Flu Network, and so they're able to rent this flying car.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I think it's worth it. And
I have the brain of Mr. Weasley.
You've got that kind of entrepreneurial brain that's going to do wonders if the Wizarding World actually exists, but it didn't. So this is just what I'm saying.
It doesn't, yeah. Exactly. And so, Blake, you mentioned the theme already, but just to kind of go back to that, our theme for this chapter is escape and reentry. And as you started the episode, this is the chapter where Harry is able to escape from the Muggle world and then reenter his place of safety, the Wizarding World. But along the way, one of the things that I found really interesting, and this might be kind of stealing the show from our literary devices later, but this is a chapter which has, I think, some pretty interesting irony in that Harry is feeling that he's going to face some really significant consequences for the magic he performs. But as soon as he sticks out his wand, he is overwhelmed by the magicalness or the magicality of the bus, right? The bus is intensely magical. Everything it does is magical. Yes. And so there's just this, again, this irony that at one moment, Harry is facing punishment for magic, but the only way out of his situation is to be using magic it's quite interesting, and I think it's done intentionally, but I always find that interesting how oftentimes Harry needs to double down and do more of what he did to get himself in trouble, which is quite funny.
Which could technically get him more in trouble if it worked out that way, but it doesn't. So yeah. Harry's all good.
And Blake, probably the character that is most significant long term in this chapter, but which we only get a glimpse of, is Sirius Black. Where do we see him?
So we see Sirius Black in kind of in dog form as like kind of the watcher of Harry, you know, and we know later on that, you know, Sirius just wanted a glimpse of Harry, you know, before heading north. Is that right, Josh? Like, I feel like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always wondered what would have,
doesn't he?
Yeah. I've always wondered what would have happened if Sirius would have just come clean to Harry right then.
I know.
It's such a great what if.
Like, yeah, that is a good what if, actually. I feel like, you know how Marvel has, they've got this what if series. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I actually don't know.
So. Okay, you don't know. Wow. Okay, this is one of those times where the concentric circles that we as friends, we don't align. Anyway, so on one of kind of Marvel's TV shows, it's an
animated. Is that the one with Batman? Is that?
Oh, Josh. Everybody driving to work listening to this podcast who loves Marvel is just going, no. But anyway,
what if Batman was in the Marvel world? I've created one. There we go.
There you go. That is, you created one. And so they have these what if on the shows, and it's kind of like, you know, what if, you know, Captain America, like Steve Rogers wasn't Captain America, you know, instead it was Agent Carter, or like, and so it was, you know, what if, you know, this happened? What if this? What if, you know, whatever it is, but they animate it all, and it's really clever. So I would love to see some of those in like Harry Potter form, you know, even animated. But it's like, what, you know, what if this happened to Harry, and all of a sudden it's like his route change. So the, you know, a big one would be, what if Harry was in Slytherin, and so you can kind of like go off that. But yeah, what if Sirius just came clean, and it's like, oh, I can't actually trust you, give me proof, you know. And he'd be like, well, I'm not going to hurt you because I don't want to hurt you, no matter what you've heard. And it would just be really interesting. So there's a lot of those things that you just think, okay, well, that would just end the book, and that's why it doesn't happen. But yeah, Sirius Black is sort of an onlooker wanting to sort of get a glimpse of Harry and just see his likeness, probably see James in him. But we also get his actual first name in this chapter, Sirius.
Yeah.
Sirius Black. So it's kind of a double introduction from the previous chapter to this chapter. And we actually kind of see that, oh, okay, we get a little bit more information from Stan Shumpike reading the newspaper that, oh, yep, this is a, you know, this is a dangerous guy, and that, like, how can you not know
who
Sirius Black is?
Yeah, and I think one thing that's really interesting, and we don't see this kind of revealed until Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, but this starts to show what the relationship looks like between the Muggle and the magical press, even as far as, you know, sharing this information when it concerns both parties. And that's just really interesting insight into the fact that both groups are very much concerned that this person is on the loose.
Yeah. And the other characters, the some fun ones, we get Stan and Ernie. So Stan Shumpike and Ernie Prang. So Stan is the conductor on the night bus. We get Ernie, who's the driver. And both are named after J.K. Rowling's two grandfathers, Ernest and Stanley. So there you go. That's a fun little thing for you. I think that's quite cool because they're quite fun characters. And I think, obviously, you wouldn't want to name your grandfathers after a character that you don't like, not like a sort of a Snape kind of character. So that's quite sweet. And then obviously that kind of meeting with Cornelius Fudge and how he just goes a bit light on Harry in the whole Sirius Black situation, because we think, why is he going light on Harry, you know? And it's later that we learn that, well, actually, because, you know, the whole wizarding community is kind of trying to like shelter Harry and like protect him from this knowledge, which if we see from Dumbledore's situation, it doesn't really go that well when you kind of try and shelter someone from knowledge, from responsibility. So those are kind of the characters that we see, but it's sort of priming us to learn more about Sirius, to learn more about his friends, a bit of the history, and looking forward to that. And so moving into world building, Josh, the night bus, we've talked already a little bit about it. I've said I'll link in the show notes that article from Rowling on the night bus, a little bit of the sort of the background and the history, but sticking out the wand hand summons the bus. That's kind of pretty cool. I don't know how, you know, and you've got to do it on a curb. So, you've got to find some kind of curb, stick it out, and then there you go. It's going to magically appear, which is pretty impressive because I feel like no Muggle bus system's going to be that efficient.
No. Yeah, I always remember whenever we'd go to different places on holidays and we'd take the bus, just looking at the different bus times and trying to figure out when the bus would come and waiting for the bus. But this is lovely. This takes almost all the bad parts of riding a bus out.
Exactly. And I mean, at the nighttime, you've got beds in there, which seem really like in the movie, it's hilarious with the beds kind of moving around and stuff, but like people don't mind at all. And then in the daytime, it switches out for seats. So that's how they do that there. But I love that, like, you know, they offer the different tiers of pricing, you know, and being like, if you do this, you get a toothbrush. If you do this one, you get a hot cup of cocoa. Cool. Who in their right mind would want to be on that bus with a hot drink in hand?
Yeah.
I feel like that is dangerous.
I'll say this. Stan Shunpike's spilling the hot chocolate on Harry, that seemed like something that happens quite often, you know? Like, that's not the first time he spilled hot chocolate.
No, I don't think so. No. I don't think so at all. And we talked about how the bus has magical powers and properties of its own. We're not too sure what specifically has been done, but we know that there's some kind of enchantments, enhancements to this bus. It's sort of in the movies, how great is that scene where kind of the two London buses, you know, coming in
and it squeezes. Oh, that's great.
I thought that was quite clever, quite fun.
As well as being violently purple.
Violently purple,
how great.
That is a cool, but it's a good contrast, like a very cool visual thing, as well as all the kind of the conceptual art that we see that I believe from Jim Kay is especially.
Just, I was just going to so say, great. Blake, it would be, I don't think we've really mentioned them so far in our series, but it'd be great to link in that illustrated edition that you're referring to.
Yes.
Just because I think the cover, especially for Prisoner of Azkaban featuring the Night Bus, is just excellent.
It's one of the best. Yeah, it's so cool. Like, I love Chamber of Secrets with you know, the illustrative editions, like it's coming to the Burrow, and that's really like, that is such a beautiful sight. But there's something about it, like a dark cover that has a great focal point of this like, yeah, violently purple bus. Yeah. I think it's really cool.
And then, Blake, beyond the Night Bus, the other thing that we see in this chapter, which is quite significant to the world that we are re-entering, is this decree for the restriction of underage wizardry. And Blake, one thing I was thinking about as I was preparing for this chapter was that on three occasions in Harry's life, he is brought up on these charges or faces some kind of consequence because of performing magic. And so this happens in the summer leading into his second year, leading into his third year, and then leading into his fifth year. And so if we take out the seventh year because he doesn't go back to school, and we take out the first year because he's just found out he's a wizard,
yes.
On three out of the five occasions, Harry gets brought up on some of these charges. And I just think it's quite interesting that I'm really curious, you know, let's take your average muggle born, not Hermione because she follows the rules too much, but yes, what about someone like Dean Thomas? Does Dean Thomas ever get a notification by the ministry, or is this a uniquely Harry issue?
Yeah. It seems like there's, you know, in some books they're protecting him. In others, they're out to get him, you know, like it's just two different things.
Well, and I think that's just the slipperiness and the corruption of Fudge, that he's just very willing to do whatever serves his ends best.
Yes.
You know, that when he needs to cast a shadow upon Harry, he all of a sudden brings up the two other times that he's broken this decree as well. And now this is the third time and it's so egregious, all these different things. But now when it serves his purposes to really be lenient to Harry, he's the first one to do it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like, man, Fudge is just like a paper bag drifting through the wind,
deep.
You know, wanting like to start again. Wind. Yeah. So a little bit of a Katy Perry song there. Never mind. Anyway.
Are you a plastic bag? Yeah.
Drifting through the wind, wanting to start again. All right. So
you
since
just got to ignite.
So this is now just become a karaoke podcast. This is great.
Maybe even a karaoke podcast.
Oh, Josh. I think it's a great way to put a line there, and we'll just move past it. And just the last aspect of world building that we have here is just this accidental magic reversal squad. So they're the people
in the
Ministry of Magic that are responsible for reversing blown up arts. So they
for puncturing Aunt Marge.
That sounds bad.
Like, it does.
Really, really scary. But anyway, so they
does she bleed, or is it just air that comes out?
Yeah, until a certain point, till she's deflated to her quirky self. And then,
well, what if like the air goes into all of your internal organs and veins and everything, and it's like air mixed with blood, and so
once again,
messy job.
Magic, you know,
yeah,
magic,
yeah, clearly.
Magic. So they must come up against some fun things, but also some dangerous stuff as well. Mm. And it would be interesting to see a whole series on some member of the accidental magic reversal squad. That could be quite a cool sub show or something like that. But coming into literary devices, Josh, what do we see here?
Yeah, we'll see a couple. Probably the big one, it's the name of the chapter, and it's the bus that we've talked so much about, is this use of a homonym. And this is a literary device which refers to a word which sounds like another word, right? The bus which comes at night is not named for the time of day, but it's called the Knight bus, named after a medieval knight.
Yeah, it's kind of, and it means both, right? Like you know, the bus operates during the night, and that's all good. But also, it's as J.K. puts it, the night has that connotation of it comes to the rescue, protection. And she said it seems appropriate for a vehicle that is often conveyance of a last resort. So that's pretty cool. So there you go.
The other thing we see, Blake, in this chapter is something which is called eye dialect. That's E-Y-E dialect. And eye dialect is what authors use, and J.K. Rowling uses it several times in the series. We can think of some other examples later, but in this chapter she uses it for both Ern and Stan Shunpike to convey their Cockney-like accent through the written word, right? It's quite hard to communicate accents through books normally.
Yeah.
But using eye dialect is having pronunciation that's visible to the eye rather than to the ear. And so if we just look maybe at a section of Stan's
while you look at that, Josh, is this something like we get with Hagrid's speech?
Yes. So Hagrid is another one. Yes.
Okay. Because Hagrid's a great example of that, eh? Because when you read the books, obviously if you're listening to the audible, you don't see that because this is a eye dialect, but like when you're reading it, it's like everything's spelt kind of wrong and differently, but like you, when you say it, you do kind of sound a bit more like Hagrid.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's just a really great way to give the characters more flesh, to kind of round them out and make them more of who they are. We also see it with Madame Maxime. We see it with, I mean, in a kind of a very obvious way with Grop.
Kind of just
Hermy. But just to go back to Stan Shunpike, he will say things like, and I'll just read it. Apologies if anybody is offended by the accent, but hopefully it does the trick. So he starts off when talking about Sirius Black to Harry, and he says, "Black was a big supporter of You Know Ooh." And it's written, was W-O-Z. You Know Ooh is You Know apostrophe O-O. And then after that, when Harry says Voldemort's name, Stan says, "You out of your tree? What'd you say his name for?"
Chew
is spelled, you know, C-H-O-O. And then, you know, later on he'll say lots of other things that just the kind of cutting off of words and just the way that we're able to read it and know, oh, we know how this guy talks. You know, he says Harry Potter instead of Harry Potter. He says, "You know, ooh," all these things. And if you read them really kind of robotically, it sounds ridiculous. But if you're able to kind of soften things, it sounds really good. And you actually get this picture of, okay, this is who Stan is. This is where he comes from. And I think it's just a really great literary device that J.K. Rowling uses really well.
Yeah, it's like rather than just saying, you know, well, hi there, y'all. You know, if it's, you know, and then say, well, hi there, y'all, said in a southern drawl or something that. It's like spelt a bit more kind of to force you to read it almost with that accent.
Yeah,
even when you're reading it, you know, silently, like not aloud. So I thought that was pretty cool, and that's definitely a fun one that we see whenever Hagrid's talking, and quite a fun little literary device there.
And Blake, for foreshadowing, this is a chapter which is pretty minor on foreshadowing. The foreshadowing that does exist in the chapter, we've really already talked about.
Yes.
You know, the foreshadowing of Harry's eventual trial by the Wizengamot in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, where this use of magic will be brought up again. So that's a small bit of foreshadowing there. We also see foreshadowing just with the Muggle wizard relations, Sirius Black, and both Muggle newspaper, Muggle News and Wizard newspaper mentioning that. And then just also the big part of foreshadowing is the dog that Harry sees, right? This idea that will eventually become the Grimm, and then back to, oh no, it's a real dog in this book.
Yeah, in the book, we sort of separate it. Like when we've heard about the Grimm, we're like, no, Harry's met a dog. Oh no. And it's like this separate kind of thing that Harry could have just imagined what he saw, and now he's plagued by, you know, because this is a fantasy world, that could happen. You know, JK could be introducing this sort of mystical, magical, like, you know, problem that Harry now has to deal with internally about, you know, what he's seeing and these fake images. And
you know,
maybe it's possession, maybe whatever it might be. But like that could be the path you're going down. You don't know at all that this is like Sirius Black just in dog form. Like we don't know that's a thing. Mm. So it's very cool the way that, you know, you're led to believe, oh, the Grimm, oh no, you know, Hermione doesn't think it's true, but you know, you don't know what Harry knows, you know. We as the reader are like, well, we know everything, you know. Harry encountered a dog, like saw that imagery. Oh, that's scary. Sorry, Harry, you're about to die, you know. And so very, very cool when it's finally revealed that Sirius Black is the dog.
Definitely. And then for significance, this chapter's primary significance will be bringing Harry safely back into the wizarding world. He's able to go from a position where he's probably in the most danger he's ever been in. You know, even if you consider the danger at Hogwarts, arguably, as we mentioned last episode, leaving the Dursleys really calls into question, is his protection all of a sudden going to cease to exist? Thankfully, it doesn't, because he is able to still consider that place home, but he is in a lot of danger and he is able to re-enter the wizarding world safely without any major consequences and be prepared to go back to Hogwarts.
Yeah. And as we come to next week's episode with the Leaky Cauldron chapter, how great is it that Harry's now, you know, he's falling asleep, but he's probably thinking, I'm here at Diagon Alley. You know, the Minister for Magic has said I can't leave for the 2 weeks or whatever, but who cares? I'm confined to a magical place. I'm part of, like, you know, this sort of wizarding society in a small capacity rather than being stuck at the Dursleys. Now he doesn't have to be afraid of kind of, you know, he's a wizard and everybody else is kind of there as well. And so, you know, he's going to have a fun time. Like, if you almost took someone, it's kind of like putting a kid and being like, hey, you're going to have to stay at this nice, you know, this, well, maybe not nice, but this sort of hotel that's attached to a big old mall, and you've got access to a whole bunch of money, go have fun, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, I think it's quite funny that Fudge feels like it's necessary to tell Harry not to go into Muggle London. It's like, I think you don't quite realize who you're speaking to, that this guy would never go to Muggle London because he doesn't have any money and he doesn't know anybody that would be of benefit. Yeah.
Yeah. It would take a very serious kind of infraction of Harry to be very disobedient, to go get Muggle money from, you know, the exchange or whatever, you know, exchange at Gringotts, maybe, for Muggle money to head into London and then, like, you know, spend time there. Like, in no way does he like that. Like, he's going to spend time chilling at, you know, the ice cream, a Sunday shop, and
Florian Fortescue's.
Sounds amazing. But anyway, that's all next chapter. It's very exciting. Next episode, we're looking forward to that. But thank you for listening. Head over to iTunes and leave a review. Your support helps keep the magic alive. Get in touch and ask us a question via Instagram, or send us an email at monthlyoutofpodcast@gmail.com. To continue the adventure, join us next time as we discuss the fourth chapter of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Leaky Cauldron.